Well, right on. Well, last week we began a series underlining our values as a church. And if you weren't here last week and you missed it, that's okay. You can go onto our website, betheloonline.ca, and you can hear the message there. So I'm not going to go too much into it, but we went over our first value, spiritual wholeness. And these values aren't in any particular order. We just put them out that way. And so spiritual wholeness is our first one. You can listen to the message and see what that is all about. Our value this morning, I know you can already see it up there, but last week we did this really cheesy but equally awesome thing where before announcing the value, we did a drum roll. So can you just humor me and can we do a drum roll together? Okay. Our second value is transformational generosity. And just in case, now I know it's a mouthful. Out of all the values that we have, transformational generosity is probably the biggest mouthful that we have. So I brought a little friend with me to kind of help illustrate this value here. So I've got Bumblebee here. He's a transformer, and he's generous. Yeah, that's right. And so he's gonna be generous to Summer. So there you go. Oh, take it. There you go. All right. So transformational generosity. Okay. So there you go. No one's ever gonna forget the day that the pastor gave away money in church. All right. But what does it mean to what does it mean to value transformational generosity? On the banner there, you may not be able to read it. It says, "We believe that generosity has the power to transform lives. We are a community who values being generous with our time, talents, and finances." And so what does it look like as a church to live this out? What does it look like to value this? You know, ever since coming to this church, my family and I have just been completely overwhelmed by the amount of generosity in this church, the amount of generosity that was expressed towards us, even from the first day that we moved here until now, and the amount of generosity that is expressed towards this community, towards one another, towards the church, you know. You've gone above and beyond what is expected, doing countless hours of work or volunteering, giving financially, completely voluntary, not without anyone poking or prodding or asking or begging. You just donate your time, you donate your money. You've been generous with your kind words towards us and towards each other. You've been generous with your hospitality. And so this is what it means to be a church that values generosity. And a value is both something that we aspire to, but it's also something that we currently live out. And so we've identified this as one of our values because it is clear that this church is already living a generous lifestyle. To value generosity as a church means that we each individually take on this responsibility of being generous, but also that corporately we set an example to the community of generosity. You know, that we would be a community of people that is known for what we give to the community as opposed to what we take from it. That when people hear the word Bethel Church, they would think, oh, that's the church that gives. That's the church that has kids programs. And that's the church that does this and this and this for the community. Right? That's what it means to be a church that is generous. You know, when I think about someone who models generosity, and you know, when you think of all the great philanthropists of our time, I think someone who models generosity is Bill Gates, right? The founder of Microsoft. Now, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Bill Gates and his wife are worth about $107 billion. Not million dollars, $107 billion. But the crazy thing is he doesn't hoard all of this money for himself. Bill and his wife, Melinda, have given away over $36 billion to eradicate polio, malaria, and other treatable diseases. They've also pledged to donate over half of their wealth to eliminate poverty and other very generous causes. Melinda Gates wrote this. She said, "When we studied the global health landscape, we realized that our resources could have a disproportionate impact. We knew we could help save literally millions of lives, so that's what we've tried to do." See, generosity makes a difference. When we are generous wisely, the impact that we have is exponential. Now, I know what you might be thinking at this point. You know, that's great for Bill and Melinda. You know, they've got literally $100 billion. But not many of us here are that affluent. And if you are, please be friends with me. You know, fair enough, okay? Fair enough. We don't have that kind of extra cash laying around. But you know what? $30 could fill one of those shoeboxes really well and really make a difference in the life of a child. You know, beginning to partner with the church by giving to missions every month could make a big difference in the lives of youth and teens and kids who go to camp and could literally have their lives turned around. And so many other mission partners. Each and every one of us can contribute what only we can contribute, right? Our generosity is proportional to what we have, to the talents that we have, to the time that we have, to the finances that we have. But each and every one of us can be a part of what God is doing around the globe. But let's move beyond money. We can be generous with our time. You know, this church is run by volunteers who use their time and their unique talents to serve the church. They make a difference with their time. You know, but it's not just churches. All different types of nonprofit organizations rely on altruistic individuals to donate their time, skills, and resources to make a difference in the world. You know, so much goodness can come from people who are being generous. And we all know this, don't we? We know that in the world that there is a huge need for people to be generous. And we know that when we are generous, that we actually feel better, we get something out of it. But why is it so hard to be generous then? You know, there's a rule you may be familiar with. It's called the 80-20 rule. And this rule is true of any organization, not just churches, not just nonprofits. This is true of organizations that literally pay people to work. But the 80-20 rule is that 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. And why is that? You know, is it this that 20% of the people have more time than everyone else, or they're more skilled than everyone else, right? I think there's two reasons, though. I think there's two main reasons that we opt out of being generous. Given the choice of being generous or looking out for ourselves, I think it really comes down to two things. The first is that we have trust issues, right? We have trust issues. We have charities and good charities all over the place asking us for our money. They're asking us for our time. They're asking us for our talents. And we've all given to help sponsor a child or to relieve crisis or to a homeless person, only to have our money misused and mishandled. You know, we've all heard the stories of millionaire non-for-profit CEOs, right? And so we have these trust issues. Well, if I let go of my money, how am I sure that that's actually going to be handled responsibly? You know, even within Christianity, there's million-dollar pastors who are constantly asking people for more and more money, right? And so all of this makes us a little bit guarded. And as soon as a pastor starts talking about money and generosity, everyone checks to make sure their wallet is there, right? Don't worry, it's still there, unless you left it at home. But the second, and I believe the main reason that we opt out of generosity is that our standard of living demands too much of us. Is that our standard of living demands too much. You know, by the time you're done paying off your student loans and your mortgage and taking care of your kids and making sure the lights in the house stay on and that their kids get to soccer camp or are off to college, there's just not a lot left. There's not a lot of wiggle room left after taking care of ourselves and taking care of our families. In fact, in the way that our society runs today, having two cars and a boat in your driveway probably means that you have more financial stress and not less financial stress. You know? And don't even get me started on time. Who has time for anything anymore? Everyone is so busy. They're running flat out from this thing to that thing to this thing. And this isn't even just true of people my age, people who are retired. Like, some of you guys are the busiest people I know. And I mean, you use a lot of that to be generous towards your time to the church, which is incredible. And I want to commend you for that. But like, man, you guys are busy. But for all of our hesitancy, if we look around us, there is a need for more generosity in the world. In a world that constantly takes and takes, one of the most life-giving things that we can do is give. And to give without an agenda, to give without a bait and switch, looking for something in return, but just to give solely for the benefit of others. See, as a church, we value transformational generosity. And that means that we want to be known in the community more for what we give than what we take. You know, in the eyes of the community, did people see Bethel as a free-riding organization that is exempt from property taxes? Or as a church that gives freely, expecting nothing in return? You know, are we leading examples both personally and corporately in this community of generosity? Now, before I scare everyone too much, let's take a look at the biblical text that really helps define this value. There's a lot of texts in the Bible that talk about generosity, but this one here I found is really narrowed in on this one the most, and it's in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 to 15. 2 Corinthians 9, 6 to 15. If you've got a Bible, that's great. You can follow along, or you can follow along on the screen. Let's read together. Remember this. A farmer who plants only a few seeds will get a small crop. But the one who plants generously will get a generous crop. You must each decide in your heart how much to give. And don't give reluctantly or in response to pressure. For God loves a person who gives cheerfully. And God will generously provide all you need. Then you will always have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others. As the scriptures say, they share freely and give generously to the poor. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. For God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and bread to eat. In the same way, he will provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity. Yes, you will be enriched in every way so that you can always be generous. And when we take your gifts to those who need them, they will thank God. So good things will result from the ministry of giving. The needs of the believers in Jerusalem will be met, and they will joyfully express their thanks to God. As a result of your ministry, they will give glory to God. For your generosity to them and to all believers will prove that you are obedient to the good news of Christ, and they will pray for you with deep affection because of the overflowing grace God has given to you. Thank God for this gift, too wonderful for words. So let me just give you a little bit of background to this text, because what I've done basically is we've just dropped in at the end of a longer conversation that Paul was having with the Corinthian church, okay? So Paul was a leader of the first century church, and he was writing this letter, this historical document, to the church in Corinth. And he's writing to them because he wants to take up a collection for the church in Jerusalem. And now he doesn't go out and say, hey, this is the exact need that's going on. They understood that between themselves. So kind of looking at it from our lens, we don't really know what the exact need was, but we know that there was a need. And the need was great enough that Paul was going from church to church and saying, hey, I'm taking up an offering to help this church in need. And so Paul begins this conversation at the beginning of chapter 8, by contrasting the affluence and comfort of the Corinthian church with the poverty and persecution of their sister church in Macedonia. He writes, "For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it out of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem." So to put it rather bluntly, Paul basically shames the Corinthian church into giving. He says, look, he's like, this church in Macedonia, they're poor, they're persecuted, they don't have 2 cents to scrub together, but you know what? They begged us to help out. And they didn't just give what they could afford, they went above and beyond and gave more than they could afford. But you guys, I'm believing that you're going to give a lot too, and you guys live a life of comfort, you've got everything that you need, and so I want you to participate in the giving as well. And so this is why Paul feels the need in verse 7 where we read, you must each decide in your heart how much to give, and don't give reluctantly or in response to pressure. See, Paul kind of starts out by guilting them, but that's really not the motivation that he's looking for. He doesn't want to guilt people into money. He says, look, if I'm pressuring you too much, if you're going to be given guilty, I don't want your money. The church in Jerusalem doesn't want your money. He says, look, like, these people are an example. The church in Macedonia is an example to follow. But when you give, make sure you do so cheerfully. And if you don't give cheerfully, then just don't give at all. Don't give as a response to pressure, but give because God gave to you. You know, and if we're to back up and we're to look at this text objectively, on a cultural level, we have a lot more in common with the church in Corinth than the church in Macedonia. You know, we live pretty comfortable lives. We live lives of comfort. We live lives free of persecution. You know, sure, there's some persecution, but I'm not going to prison for preaching this morning. And so when Paul unpacks the why behind generosity, we're the audience that he's really kind of speaking to. You know, and so he says, look, let me hold your hand and show you why it's important to be generous. And how generosity can transform everyone it comes in contact with. So I have a couple points this morning about people or things that generosity transforms. And the first one is that generosity transforms others. Now, this is the most obvious way that generosity works. And for that reason, it's the one that we usually think of right away. In verse 12, Paul tells the Corinthians that their generosity will result in the needs of the believers in Jerusalem being met. He's like, hey, if you give this physical need that they have, it's going to be met. You know, it's pretty straightforward. You know, I can think of so many times in my life where someone's act of generosity towards me profoundly impacted me. I don't know about you, but when I become an object of someone's generosity, when someone is generous to me, it not only alleviates my immediate physical need, but it also does something inside of me. And to give you an example, back before I went to Bible college, I was a little bit naive. I had a little bit of a flair for the melodramatic, okay? But I really believed that God had called me to go to Bible college without getting any student loans. Now, still to this day, I'm not sure if that was faith or foolishness. You know, you be the judge. I'm not even sure on this at this point. But I believed. I was like, you know what, God? I believe that you want me to go through Bible college debt-free. And he did. We made it. It was a pretty rough going at times, but that's another story. But I was sitting there the night before I was going to leave for Bible college. Literally, my friend was going to come and pick me up in the morning, and I didn't have enough money to pay for Bible college. I needed a $2,000 down payment just to get me started for the year, and I didn't have it, and I was just sitting there kind of waiting for someone to drop $2,000 into my lap, right? And I just kind of gave up hope, and I was telling my grandmother about this, and she was a believer, and I was just like, look, like, this is what I thought. I really believed that God was going to provide, and that I wasn't supposed to get any debts, and I wasn't supposed to wait. I'm supposed to go right now, but you know, I'm just not going to be able to do it. Now, my grandmother could have responded, by the way, I probably would respond if my kids came up to me in that situation, and said, hey, you know what? It's okay. Work for a year, you know, be responsible, make some money, get some life experience, and go to college. You can still go debt-free. But my grandmother went above and beyond that. She met me where I was at, and she got up, and she wrote me a check for $2,000. And I went to Bible college the next day, and, you know, here I am today. And that act of generosity still sits with me. Did I deserve that act of generosity? No. I probably could have, you know, had faith, yes, but maybe worked a little bit, saved a little harder. But God provided. And he provided through my very generous grandmother. And I'm still impacted by that. You know, in the moments when we're generous, it's usually because we believe that we can support a cause or make a difference or help someone in need. And this is really the foundational element of generosity. Sacrificial giving. Not giving because we have to, not giving so we can get something in return, not giving because we were guilted into it, but giving solely for the benefit of others. Generosity means that we do without so others can have. Our assistant superintendent for the PAOC, David Hazard, wrote this about generosity. He said, "Generosity includes much more than the giving of finances. It is the tangible expression of a mature heart and a healthy spirit that seeks the benefit of others." See, there are countless ways that we can be generous towards others that extend beyond just a moment of philanthropic giving or a moment of volunteering. See, generosity should be a lifestyle. See, the gift of generous love can transform those crippled by a sense of shame or unworthiness. Being generous and offering forgiveness can alleviate the burden that we place on people. We can be generous in our serving, improving the lives of those around us by practical acts of benevolence. The point is this, that generosity has the power to transform lives. People's lives can be turned around by even a single act of generosity. And as a church, that means that we give expecting nothing in return. We are generous in our interactions with each other and in the community, even at a cost to ourselves. Why? Because the heart of generosity is sacrificial giving. The second thing that generosity transforms is generosity transforms us. Generosity transforms us. And there's Paul points out two ways that generosity transforms us. And the first is that God provides for us when we are generous. He gives us a harvest of provision. Paul jumps right into this farming metaphor in verse 6 to illustrate this point. He says, "Remember this, a farmer who plants only a few seeds will get a small crop, but the one who plants generously will get a generous crop." Last Saturday, my family and I, we went and did a tour of a farm, which was kind of a big deal for my family, but I grew up in Alberta, so I'm kind of used to farms. I went along anyways. But I learned something that was mildly interesting at this farm, though. We went to this farm, and they were known, apparently, for their award-winning musical garlic, okay? Which, for me, is revolutionary for two reasons. One, I didn't realize that there were different types of garlic, and I still want to know why it's called musical garlic. Like, it doesn't sing. But anyways. And second is, apparently, you can win awards for growing garlic, which I thought was pretty cool. But anyway, so they're known for their garlic, okay? They've got like the best garlic there is around. And he was saying that what he does every time the harvest comes, he takes the biggest and best pieces of garlic, and he doesn't sell them, he stores them. And he says he uses them for seed the next year. And this is kind of the universal farming truth that Paul is really laying onto our finances here. He's saying, look, if you're going to be stingy and scarce with your generosity, then you can expect other people to be stingy and scarce with you. It's like, but if you are generous, if you go without in the moment to be generous, then God will provide everything you need. He will provide a harvest of provision. He says, and God will generously provide all you need. Then you will have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others. See, part of the God providing for you when you're being generous is so you can continue to be generous. Not so you can hoard it all, but you can continue to give it away. When we are generous, God provides for us so we can continue to be generous. And this is hard to come to terms with, isn't it? You know, we try so hard to accumulate wealth and possessions and things to be happy. But then God comes along and he tells us that it's better to give than to receive. And this is completely counterintuitive to us, because giving up control is hard. Pastor of the City Church in New York, Timothy Keller, writes, "One of the main reasons that we trust God too little is that we trust our own wisdom too much. We think we know far better than God how to live, how our lives should go, and what will make us happy. But when we embrace God's kingdom culture, we find out that God really does care. And that he really does know far better than us what is good for us. We understand that when we're generous, that he will provide for all of our needs. So that's the first way that God transforms us when we're generous, is he provides for us. Second is God provides a harvest of righteousness. And this is of far greater value. In verse 10 we read, "For God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and bread to eat. In the same way, he will provide an increase and increase your resources, and then you will produce a great harvest of generosity in you." Now, instead of generosity, the original Greek uses the word diakosuna, which means righteousness. So he says, God is going to make in you a harvest of righteousness. And so this is slightly different. What this means is that instead of God just making you more generous in your giving by, you know, I've got more money now, so I'm gonna give more, God goes above and beyond that. He says, no, I'm going to make a harvest of you in generosity in every single way. You're going to be more generous in your giving. You're going to be more generous in your relationships. You're going to be more generous in your love. You're going to be more generous in your good works. And God's grace is going to be more generous to us. It's this understanding that when we are generous, that Christ does something so deep within us. And I think this all comes back to that trust that Timothy Keller was talking about. You know, there's something about money that when we give that money away, it's almost like we're giving away a little piece of ourselves, isn't it? We're giving away that little bit of control. And when we give, when we're generous, we say, you know what, God, you're in control. And when God's in control, he's like, good, then let me bless you, because that's what I wanted to do in the first place. We suddenly find that we're more generous in our relationships, in our good works, in our love, and on it goes. And this is why sometimes I like to say we don't have to give, we get to give. You know, we don't give because God will produce a harvest of righteousness. We don't give because God will provide. These are added benefits that just come with the territory. And thirdly, and this one kind of hit me by surprise as I was studying. That's one of the things I love about studying the Bible, is you always get hit by surprise by things. Generosity transforms into praise. Generosity transforms into praise. See, generosity transforms others, it transforms us, but it also brings glory to God. In verse 12, we read this. It says, "So two things will result from your ministry of giving. The need of the believers in Jerusalem will be met, which we've already talked about. And then they will joyfully express thanks to God." See, for Paul, the ultimate goal of generosity is actually praise to God. The ultimate goal is not for our transformation or others' transformation, but the transformation of generosity into praise. And perhaps if you really look at it, this is also the greatest way that generosity transforms us. If the end goal of generosity is to bring attention back to God, to our provider, then it was really never about us in the first place. And this is where God really works. See, the purpose of all creation is to bring glory to its creator. And in our very us-centric thinking, this can be hard to grasp. But the main reason to be generous is so that people will look to Jesus. See, generosity not only practically fuels ministry, which brings praise to God, but even just the act of generosity itself brings praise to God. And, you know, when I think of all of the times in my own life when people have been generous with me, I've always thanked God. And I don't say that to talk about how spiritual I am or how good of a person I am. I'm just saying that is the natural result of being the recipient of generosity, is being thankful. It's just recognizing what God has done for you. And it just overflows in prayers of thankfulness. And Paul ends with this thought, really just to nail it home. He says, "As a result of your ministry, they will give glory to God, for your generosity to them and to all believers will prove that you are obedient to the good news of Christ. And they will pray for you with deep affection because of the overflowing grace God has given to you. Thank God for this gift too wonderful for words." What Paul is talking about here is what I like to call the feedback loop of generosity. Now, if you don't know what feedback is, or feedback loop is, we've all been to an event or something when a mic like makes that terrible, horrific, screeching sound. And what that is just the hum of the monitor gets picked up in the mic, and it goes back and forth, and gets louder and louder and louder until you end up with this really horrific, screeching noise. Now, feedback is also used for electric guitars and rock guitar, and people who like rock or people who play guitar will know this, that you can get a really sweet sound coming out of your guitar by creating that feedback loop and controlling it so it doesn't just explode. But this is what a feedback loop is. It goes around and around and gets louder and louder each time. Generosity creates a feedback loop of sorts. See, when we're generous, people's needs are met. And when people's needs are met, they thank God and they bless you. They bless you and thank God for you. And as a result, you become better equipped to be even more generous. And it gets louder and louder and louder. The more that we're generous, the more God enables us to be generous. And the more praises go up to God, and it loops and loops and loops. And that's why Paul finishes with that saying, thanks be to God for this incredible gift. This thing that just goes on and on and on. So generosity has the power to transform others, us, and to transform our hearts to give praise to God. But for all of this, I still haven't mentioned the single greatest, most transformational act of generosity. Ben, I'm going to invite you to come on up. Now, earlier I said that the generosity, at its heart, is sacrificial love. Generosity at its heart is sacrificial love. And John 3:16, it says this. It says, for this is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only Son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave. And that one act of generosity changes everything. It has literally transformed thousands, millions, even billions of lives. See, we were undeserving, and he had nothing to gain, but he gave solely for our benefit so that we could be transformed, to have our lives turned around and to be made completely new. See, this is the heart of generosity. We give because Jesus gave. We give because God gave. And so when Paul says give cheerfully, don't give reluctantly, this is what he's talking about. And so how do we respond to this great act of generosity and love? Well, you know, obviously, yeah, ask God, like, how are you asking me to be more generous? But even more than that, in this moment, we can respond, and we can respond by giving God a resounding thanks, by thanking him for all of that he has done for us, for thanking him for his great act of generosity on the cross. And so we're going to sing a song, What a Beautiful Name. And I just want you to sing it with thankfulness, sing it with praise, sing it knowing that God was generous towards you.